Okay, thank you very much for the invitation to come here. I will talk about an isotropic inhomogeneous cosmology. A very physical question associated to the study of this cosmology is how to start the universe in an homogeneous universe. Now, inflation is believed to have problems to start, and this talk will argue or prove that one of the reasons or concerns, there are many supposed problems in inflation. I will argue that one of them is not sustained. And I will do so by using some interesting and unusual mathematics, which, however, is used to answer very, very physical questions. Now, the problem we will talk today is the following. Inflation is a scalar, is thought to be a scalar, for our purpose of this talk, is a scalar field sitting on top of the potential. And we know that everybody believes that if you take a box full of the inflaton on top of the potential, this region is homogeneous, and this region is large enough of order the Hubble, there would be the inflationary Hubble patch, then inflation starts. For example, this was argued by Bacciaspati and Trode, several people. So this is not under question. The real question that many people ask is, first of all, if you need already homogeneities on the Hubble patch, why is inflation already solving the homogeneity problem, given that it solves the homogeneity on the Hubble patch? This is not completely fair, because the initial Hubble patch can be very, very energetic, so it's not so, it's much closer to the plus scale. But the real question is, how likely is to have such an homogeneous patch of this size over the inflation Hubble patch? So here, I will first present an analytic argument that I find compelling, which is not by me, that says that the probability to have such an homogeneous inflationary Hubble patch goes like it's exponentially small in the ratio M Planck over the inflationary Hubble patch, which is a very, very small number if the inflationary Hubble patch is much smaller than M Planck, which is the case given that we know here. I will show that this argument is not really correct, but let us open first a parenthesis. Let us review how it works in FRW cosmology, because in FRW cosmology, we know it very well, and things will become clear. FRW cosmology is an FRW spacetime can be represented as a foliation of a four-dimensional metric of times, times, and surfaces, and each surface is multiplied by a scale factor, and each surface has a radial metric times R squared times the metric of a sphere. Now, this radial metric has this factor, and this factor is at a plus one, in which case the topology of these spatial surfaces are spheres. Kappa equals zero means flat, and kappa equals minus one means hyperboloid. In three dimensions, in two dimensions, they're these. Now, in this way of writing the metric, the scale factor A of t is the radius of curvature of these spatial slices. The typical evolution of an FRW universe depends on the topology of these spheres, of these spatial surfaces. In fact, this is the evolution for a flat manifold. This is for an open manifold, and this is for a closed universe. You can see that the closed universe goes to a blank crunch. Everybody starts with a Big Bang. The universe is Big Bang means that the universe starts expanding everywhere. But then the closed universe recollapses. So it means that depending on the topology, there's a clear distinction of the asymptotic of the space-time. Now, it's very easy to see immediately that only the closed universe can recollapse, the universe which is a sphere. In fact, and the other ones cannot recollapse. In fact, consider this spatial surface sigma. And to establish, I will use this to, I'm doing the FRW case to establish the notation, because the general case will be in which we consider complete anisotropic and homogeneous cosmology will be very similar. So consider a surface sigma that is an orthonormal vector, which for FRW is just 1, 0. The metric induced on this spatial slices is the spacetime matrix plus a mu and nu. In fact, for this case, you can see that H00, H0i are 0, and Hij is simply Gij. Now, consider Einstein equation, G mu nu equal 8 pi Gt mu nu, plus a cosmological constant. And contract it with G mu nu with the normal vectors. Now, if you open up what G mu nu is, on the left-hand side, you get h squared plus kappa over a squared, where kappa is the curvature. So this is kappa over a squared is the curvature, kappa is plus or minus 1. So it's one of the radius of curvature of the universe. Here we get the matter, and here we get the contribution of the cosmological constant. Now, so this is the Friedmann equation for curved universes, FRW universe. Now, if the universe starts expanding, and then it turns back, it means that Hubble must go from positive to negative. And so, by continuity, H must be zero at some point. So if you plug H back into this equation, you see that on this surface where H equals zero, which is an equal time surface because everything here is homogeneous, so in this T equal constant surface where H equals zero, it must be true that kappa, the curvature, kappa over A squared, must be equal to these quantities. But if rho is bigger than zero and lambda is bigger than zero, so if the energy is positive and the cosmological constant is positive, and we take a flat or open universe, this equation cannot be satisfied because this is negative, this is positive. So such a surface cannot exist. So we immediately see, without solving any equation, no need of having the solution, that an open or flat universe cannot recollapse. A transition from a Big Bang to a Big Crunch can only happen for a closed universe. So there is no need, as I said, for explicit solution. While a universe which is closed indeed can recollapse, but it's not clear that it's always recollapse. And this depends on the initial condition, the matter content of the universe. In particular, a universe that it's very easy to see from the same equation, that a closed universe, for it not to recollapse, it better be that the curvature that wants to dominate at late times is not capable of dominating because this curvature, as the universe expands, wins over the matter in general. For example, this is the curve, the curve for dark matter. But if by the time this wants to win, lambda dominates, then the universe starts expanding like the Sitter space. So this means that for a closed universe not to recollapse, the universe must be so large to be longer than the Sitter radius that is induced by the cosmological constant. When this is the case, the universe starts keep expanding forever. But this doesn't need to be the case, depends on the initial condition rho, etc. Or you need to have a large cosmological constant. But otherwise, when the curvature starts to dominate, the universe recollapses in Hubble time. So it's very important that as soon as the curvature dominates, it collapses in the only time scale, which is in the problem, which is in Hubble time. So this allows us to explain the typical problem that people refer as the initial patch problem, which is it looks like we need to set inflation to have an homogeneous patch of order Hubble size, which is homogeneous. So imagine instead we start with a very small inhomogeneous universe, which means that the Hubble rate is very high, the Hubble length is very small. And this universe is very inhomogeneous, and the universe will expand somehow, some way, maybe like radiation, say, typically, like a FRW radiation in some average sense. So if the universe is initially not dominated by the infrared, for example, is dominated by potential energy, but is dominated by radiation, in order to start inflation, Hubble must decrease, and we're talking about the decelerated spatial, must decrease all the way from the initial Hubble, say, and Planck, for example, to the inflationary Hubble patch. During this time, since the expansion of the universe is decelerating, many modes become shorter than Hubble. Now, as long as a mode is longer than the Hubble length, its effect on the dynamics is very simple to understand. It's just a renormalization of the effective cosmological background energy density that is locally defined. That is, physics is only sensitive to local physics, which is the length scale covered by the Hubble length. And therefore, if you have an universe with this Hubble length, whatever any mode which is longer than this Hubble length can be thought as a rescaling of the background and density. So, but at each step, Hubble changes because the universe expands. At each step, Hubble changes. So after one Hubble time, we go from that Hubble to this Hubble. And so what was an homogeneous mode now is no more an homogeneous mode. And so since delta rho over rho is over the one, we're talking about completely homogeneous universe, what would be the homogeneous density or the local FRW universe that I can define changes by order one. And by the Hubble equations that we think locally can hold if we are just looking at the long wavelet fluctuations, this means that the curvature jumps by order one at every time step because delta rho over rho has changed by order one. So the curvature jumps by order one at each double time. And the problem is that as I said before, as soon as the universe becomes closed, it recollapses in Hubble time. So, and we have to get down from M Planck all the way to Hubble inflation, so about at least five orders of magnitude. So the number of modes entering the horizon before starting inflation scales more or less like this scale, M Planck over H inflation. So, and then if you say that every mode, that every one of these modes is uncorrelated, better be that every mode that enters inside the Hubble scale is such that contributes to make the universe more open. And every time it's 50-50, so the probability to survive, and as soon as you get a closed universe, you collapse. So the probability to survive all the way so that the universe cool down all the way to Hubble inflation is e to the minus M Planck over H, which suggests that inflation seems to be exponentially unlikely. This is called the initial patch problem, and there is many authors, and frankly, I find this argument pretty compelling. I mean, it's not trivial, it sounds good. I think, however, people also sometimes say that as soon as we push down the scale of inflation, you start inflation is harder and harder and harder. We will see that this argument is instead incorrect, but for a subtle reason, because really, I think this argument is interesting to me. It's wrong for a subtle reason. So even before solving this problem, several mechanisms were already proposed to solve this problem. So it's not that this problem was not going for inflation. For example, Linde liked starting with a Planckian torus where there is only one mode and there was no problem. I like to starting out of false vacuum inflation nucleating in an inflationary potential, and the universe is already homogeneous by the Coleman-Deluccia instanton. So there were several mechanisms that were proposed to solve this problem, that made this problem not an issue. But somehow we continue to talk about this problem, and I think because all these were ad hoc mechanisms, were possibilities but not necessary solution, necessary to the model of inflation. Instead, the solution we present here instead is radically different. In fact, we will show that this problem instead is non-existent. Okay, so it's a very different reason. But again, it's not existent for a deep, non-trivial reason. Now, I told you at the beginning FRW. Open and flat of FRW universe cannot recollapse, only closed can recollapse. Let's move on towards anisotropic inhomogeneous cosmology. Already Wald in 1983 studied the case of homogeneous but anisotropic universes. These are called Bianchi universe. These universes are not closed, and it showed that all the universes that are not closed, and by closed for Bianchi universe we mean all the universes which are Bianchi, not of the kind the Bianchi type 9. Of all the Bianchi universe, only the type 9 is closed, and it showed that these ones cannot recollapse if the weak energy condition is satisfied, which means that T mu nu, T mu, T nu is bigger than zero for any time like T mu. In practice, this means that the energy density and the energy density plus pressure are bigger than zero, or equal to zero. But moving from homogeneity to inhomogeneity is much more challenging than moving from isotropy to anisotropy, because the technical reasons are that the differential equations becomes partial differential equations. And also the breaking of homogeneity implies that singularities can form, geodesics begin to cross, geodesics are not straight line. It's a much, much less symmetric situation than the isotropic case. But we will see that this sort of very similar conclusion to the one of Wald in 1983 holds. Okay, so let's now address the completely inhomogeneous anisotropic case. And let us therefore consider general cosmologies. That is, in the case of anisotropic universe, it's even somewhat challenging to define what is a cosmology. This was done by Gerhardt in the 70s. So we will assume that we have a cosmology, where a cosmology means that we are endowed with a connected 3 plus 1 dimensional space-time with a compact Cauchy surface. That is, we have a Cauchy surface, there's a Cauchy surface in a manifold which is 3 plus 1 dimensional. This definition, a space-time manifold with a Cauchy surface, is equivalent to say that the space-time is topologically M cross R. So the manifold, a three-dimensional manifold cross R, which you can think of as a time, as an affine time, not the proper time necessarily. And this also implies that this space-time can be foliated with a family of topological identity surfaces we can call MOT. So it's R cross MOT, and MOT cannot change topology during the evolution. So this is what is called a cosmology. And we will study these space-times. If you don't have these, you don't even have a Cauchy problem, so it's a bit unclear what else to do. So the theorem that we will prove is the following. Under these and other assumptions that we will specify, we will prove the following. There cannot exist a non-singular hypersurface with maximum volume. That is, given any slice, there is another with larger spatial volume. Furthermore, in an initially expanding universe, that is, in a universe where there is a Big Bang, there must be at least one expanding region on every slice, on every spatial slice, on every time slice. And if the cosmological constant or the inflaton potential is positive, the expansion rate in this region, which is expanding, is bounded from below by the expansion rate that would be obtained in the Descartes space-time with the cosmological constant that can be identified in the flat slicing. That is, if a universe starts, so I repeat, there cannot be a surface of maximum volume, and if the universe was initially expanding, there is always a region which keeps expanding, and the expansion rate in this region is pretty fast. It's faster than what would be in inflation. This implies that if you have a Big Bang, Big Bang cosmology, if these conditions are satisfied, that I will spell out, there cannot be a collapse, a big crunch. This strongly suggested that if that exactly the worry that we had before, that the universe recollapses everywhere and inflation cannot start, this strongly suggests that inflation in this kind of cosmology will eventually start because the universe keeps expanding and cannot recollapse. No matter how big are the homogeneities, no matter how many black holes you form, and no matter what the scale of inflation is. Good, yes. Okay, I think we're talking about the problems of inflation. Let's assume that, you're right. Another hypothesis that I will spell out is that we have a Lagrangia which does inflation. That is, if you don't want to put an inflationary potential. Yeah, so if you're on top of the potential, inflation will happen. Yeah, this will be one of the hypotheses.
Thank you.
Yes, this case will be one of the hypotheses. That is, this is one of the hypotheses. That is, okay, here we're talking about, I think your problem is a different problem than what we're talking about. Now you're talking, so the normal problem is that we don't survive until the time where the Hubble is Hubble inflation. This is the problem we are solving. What you're saying about is that the inflaton is not staying on top of the potential, gets to the bottom of the potential by that time. In fact, this is an hypothesis we need to do. So if you have a flat potential with kinetic domination, and by the time Hubble reaches Hubble inflation with kinetic domination, and then the inflaton is on top of the potential, if the potential is long enough, inflation will start. So
you're implicitly assuming some measure.
No. Which is not mentioned in the scenario. So fine. So I mean the theorem says that under assumption that we will specify. So you will see that I'll specify this assumption. So do you agree that this is the problem? Do you agree that people made this problem? Maybe you didn't.
Not entirely, no.
No, okay. There is a paper.
You've made positive assumptions.
Okay, I think many people agree that this is called the initial patch problem. And this is the problem we're gonna solve. I'm putting all the inhomogeneities that you want. I disagree with this. If you have a potential long enough, of course, if you want to shoot the inflaton out of the potential, it's okay. But this is not what we're talking about here. We were talking about here the fact that every single point, sooner or later, there is a mode that closes the universe and the universe collapses. For example, this argument was made by Steinhardt, but also by Vasya Spati, Trode, many people. Maybe you didn't do it, but this is called the initial inflationary. I find strange that we don't agree on. Okay.
What the problem is. No,
yes.
There's another problem.
Okay, I apologize. If nobody heard about this problem, it's okay. I heard about it, okay?
But look,
and this is the one we're solving. I'm not solving all the problems. Look at the introduction. I'm not solving all the problem of inflation. I'm solving this problem, okay? This is one of the reasons concerns. No, you can keep the others, but we're just trying to solve this one. And I think this problem exists. People were talking about this, okay.
But let me just be clear. The problem we're solving applies equally well if I have a fixed positive constant. Just forget about inflation. Just grant you.
Yes. Yes. Correct. Correct. Well, you form a lot of black hole, not everywhere it rushes away. And I should. Yeah, this is the problem we are dealing with. Good. In fact, that's why we started doing it, because we thought it was obviously wrong. Sorry? Say it again?
You're doing homogeneous cosmology. Do you have position dependence as well as time dependence?
Yeah.
So because you use a Tolman pointed, an extra pointed homogeneous, which is an exact solution.
Yes, but we. Yeah. Okay. We will use all solutions. It's very. The space time will be super complicated, as complicated as you can imagine. Black hole, black rings, anything. Okay. Yeah. We're not avoiding those problems. Okay, so this is the theorem. Now, the proof of the theorem is very simple. So as I repeat, sorry, because there was a bit of interaction. So if you take a universe which is expanding, with certain topology, some condition that we will spell out, the universe cannot stop expanding globally. Many places will form black hole. The universe is very inhomogeneous. Things will collapse. But there will always be a region which expand as fast as in the city space, getting rid of the problem that I said in the introduction, the so-called initial patch problem. And the proof is very simple. A regular surface of maximum volume must have an extrinsic curvature kappa equal zero everywhere. This is, I will explain why. To satisfy Einstein's equation, if kappa is equal to zero, means that everywhere it must be that the Ricci scalar of the surface must be bigger than zero. But unfortunately, there is a topological condition for some manifold that, at least in one point, the Ricci scalar must be negative. And therefore, this is not compatible with having extrinsic curvature zero everywhere. For example, in FRW universe, the Hubble, the extrinsic curvature is Hubble. So Hubble has to be zero in the extremal surface. This is generic. And since in some geometries, R3 must be less than zero, in some topology, R3 must be negative at least at one point, this maximum surface cannot exist. So let's spell out the conditions. We have a cosmology, as I said. The spatial topology must be not of the kind closed, which I will define in a second what that means by closed. It's analogous to complete inhomogeneous spacetimes of the closed FRW topology. We define beetle. That is, roughly speaking, the surfaces that foliate the spacetime must not be spheres, topologically equivalent to a sphere. And also the weak energy condition hold, which means that, for example, satisfy my meta radiation and a positive potential, a positive cosmological constant. Negative cosmological constant doesn't satisfy that. Now, let's establish some notation. It's similar to what we said before. A mu is an orthonormal vector, normal to this surface is sigma. This is the spatial metric. And the extrinsic curvature is the covariant derivative of the normal vector projected on the surface. This h mu nu is the metric of the surface, but also acts as a projector of the surface. And in particular, we have the trace of the extrinsic curvature, which is just the divergence of this vector. And this basically means how fast diverge from one another the geodesics induced by the mu at the surfaces, the normal vectors at the surface. And you can define the traceless part of the metric. And notice that this extrinsic curvature, traceless part of the extrinsic curvature, and both the extrinsic curvature and the extrinsic curvature is a tensor defined on the surface. It's a tensor of the surface. In particular, it's important for us to realize that the Lie derivative along the normal of the volume form, or the log of the volume form, square root of G, square root of H, of the metric, is given by the extrinsic curvature. So the extrinsic curvature, which represents the divergence of the geodesic, is nothing but how much the rate of growth of the space volume. Roughly speaking, square root of gauge grows exponentially with the extrinsic curvature. In fact, in the Sitter space, Hubble, the extrinsic curvature is Hubble, Hubble is constant, volume grows exponentially. Okay, so let's do the proof, and it's very similar to the case for FRW. Take Einstein equation, G mu nu equal 8 pi G nu T mu T nu, and now I put the cosmological constant inside T mu nu. Let's contract twice with mu and nu. Now, this space-time is completely non-homogeneous, enough, it's not Tolman-Bondi, it's anything that we want, any cosmology. So it turns out that there is a Gauss-Kodazzi formula that relates the projector of G mu nu on a mu to R3, to this combination of R3 and squares of the extrinsic curvature, which are three quantities that purely define of the sphere. R3 is the R3 of the sphere, of the surface, sorry, a quantity defined on the surface, and these ones are the extrinsic curvature. So using the Gauss-Kodazzi relation, Einstein equation becomes this. Einstein equation becomes this. And now, let's imagine that there is an extremal surface. In order to have an extremal surface, it must be stationary to any deformation of the surface. And since the variation of the volume is kappa, if you deform it along the normal, then kappa must be zero everywhere. This means that if you write the Einstein equation on this extremal surface, if it exists, it must be true that this is true. T mu nu and mu nu equal R3 minus sigma mu nu square. I took kappa equal to zero. But by the weak energy condition, this is bigger or equal to zero. And this is basically the traceless part of the square of the traceless part of sigma of kappa mu nu, and is a special tensor. So the square it's a Euclidean tensor, so its square is positive, so this is a negative term. So this, in order for this to be satisfied, we must have that R3 is always positive at each locate point. So if R3 is negative, the Ricci scalar of the surface is negative 1 point, the equation cannot be satisfied and extrema surfaces does not exist. And it does now that for an order one fraction of all the topologies, R3 negative R3 must be negative at least 1 point, so the extrema surface cannot exist. This means that if you have a space-time with this topology, and there is either a Big Bang, which means that in the past the universe started everywhere expanding, or there is a big crunch, which means that in the future everywhere is going to zero, there is always a surface, given a surface, there is always a surface with larger volume, because kappa cannot be equal to zero, and therefore you can deform the surface to make it larger. And this can only be in the future if you have a Big Bang, or moving towards in the past if you have a big crunch. In fact, the surface can be found with the following procedure, which is called the mean curvature flow. It is not that we discovered this thing, and then we went to very cool, and then it is not that it's a field of mathematics, and the mathematician laughed at us when we said, oh, look, you can do this. So you can, you can take a surface, and given a surface, this is the procedure to find the larger surface. This is a field of mathematics called mean curvature flow. So take a surface, and there will be points where, as I said, kappa generically will be, the extrinsic curvature will be positive or negative somewhere. So you can deform this surface along, move it each point along the normal. I'm not sure this is visible, but I don't know what to do. Along the normal. And you go move forward if the universe is, if the local region is expanding. And kappa negative means it's contracting the surface, so you go back in time. And back in time. The change in volume of this procedure is the derivative of the volume, which is kappa, times kappa itself, because the movement is proportional to kappa, so it goes like kappa square, and so it's a sort of average of kappa square, which is bigger than zero. So this procedure of deformation of the surface, which is called mean curvature flow, increases necessarily the volume, and it can only do two things. It can either converge to an extrema surface, but in order for this to converge to an extrema surface, it means that the volume is stationary, which means that kappa is zero everywhere, because kappa square must be zero everywhere. So if it exists, such a possibility, it's okay. But otherwise, it can only keep growing, 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 finding larger and larger volume indefinitely. Notice that this is true for arbitrarily perturbed manifold. That is, yes, because there are, yes, good, thanks. There are regularity theorems for mean curve, good, thanks. There are regularity, these surfaces tend to be extremely regular. I should have said it, but there are regularity theorems for this, that this doesn't happen. Because, and this really depends on where you do mean curve to flow. Here we do mean curve to flow for three-dimensional surfaces in a four-dimensional Lorentzian space-time. And so you can see that this mean curvature flow is actually stretching the surface. So the intuition behind this is that at each time we're stretching it. So we're making smoother and smoother the surface. For example, this mean curvature flow applies to any perturbed manifold. In particular, I'm not forbidding that there are black holes in the future, but black hole black hole are crashing singularities. So this procedure will not go there, because you see that it moves forward in time only if kappa, if the universe is the surface is expanding. As soon as the surface is contracted, it stops. That is, it stops at kappa equals zero. If there is a point where so there could be singularities here, but the mean curvature flow does not go there. Thank you. Okay, so this is the procedure to get a larger surface, so even in a completely inhomogeneous space-time. But you need to have, this process will not stop, will stop only if kappa can be zero everywhere, which means that R3 must be negative, must not be negative anywhere. So we have to understand that this procedure will not stop only for the manifold for which on its surface R3 must be negative somewhere. So the manifold have this property are classified by this called Trostron classification conjecture. And actually, this is not a conjecture, but it's actually a this is called Trostron geometrization conjecture. And now it's called Thomas geometrization classification. And it was proved by a combination of Thorsson, Hamilton, and Perelman. Perelman is the one of the Riemann hypothesis, because these are the same techniques. And actually, the Riemann hypothesis is a corollary of this result. So this is a very important result in mathematics, of which I have no deep understanding, but I can report. Sorry, Poincaré correction, thanks. And I can only report this. This is this is very deep, OK? So all compact-oriented free manifolds fall into one of these three classes. There are so-called closed manifold, in which they are classified by the following thing. Any function defined on this compact surface can be the scalar Ricci of a smooth metric defined on this manifold if it is a generic function. So it can be positive, negative, can do whatever they want. In particular, it can also be completely negative. For example, manifold of the closed are, for example, the sphere. You can put a completely negative metric, Ricci scalar, everywhere on the sphere. But it's true that you can put a positive Ricci scalar on the sphere. This is the standard metric. S2 crosses 1. So these are the ones. What is beautiful of this conjecture or classification is that all the manifolds are classified by the homogeneous ones. These are all the homogeneous, which are sort of translation invariant. And turns out that these are all the basis of all the topologies. The second category of manifold is called flat, in which any function defined on this manifold can be the Riemann of a smooth metric defined on this MTE if it is either negative somewhere or zero everywhere. Okay. So either Ricci is zero everywhere or it is negative somewhere. For example, the tori. Are these ones. And then the third classes are called open. And any function on this surface can be the Ricci scalar of a metric on this surface if it is negative somewhere. So they must be negative somewhere. And these are compactification of hyperboloidi, H2 cross R, Nil, Sol, STL2R. And these are all the topologies that you have these are the basis of all topologies that you have for compact manifold in two dimensions. In fact, there is in topology a procedure of gluing a manifold. It turns out that if you connect in a standard way, any of these one manifold with one containing the class 3, then the resulting manifold is of class 3. So these are all the manifolds. And you can see that in a sense, and not in a very deep serious mathematical sense, but most of the manifolds are of class 3. Because if you glue with one of class 3, you become class 3. So first of all, it's pretty nice that the set of topologies is countable. So we started with FRW universe, which is homogeneous isotropic. And then we have and there are only three topologies. Four, actually, there's also RP3. Then we go to Bianchi, and which breaks homogeneities, and we breaks isotropy, and we get to 9 or 10. And here, instead, we have a countable but finite. It's not rational, it's just integers, OK? So all the topologies are classified by this number. Now, for type 3 manifold, the open one, the theorem is established. R3 must be negative somewhere. The universe cannot collapse. For type 2, it could be that one of the two options for type 2 is that the R3 is zero everywhere. But if R3 is zero everywhere, also if you impose the dominant energy conditions, which simply means that rho is bigger than P for the meta, then you find that the extrinsic curvature must be exactly equal to zero, and also T mu nu must be equal to zero, which means that the universe must be empty. In fact, class 2 is Minkowski, is Torai. And to make a universe, like a flat universe, to stop and to reach an extreme surface, not to expand anymore, it better be empty. Okay. So this is an empty universe. T mu nu is equal to zero, all components. So OK, it's a case of marginal interest. But for open universes, and including also the flat universe is not empty, or by open I mean this, including the flat universe which are not empty, R3 must be less than zero somewhere. And given that this is just an equation, kappa cannot be zero anywhere, and in particular, kappa, at the point where R3 is negative, since this is negative and this is positive, sigma 1 squared is positive, R3 is negative, at the point in the region where R3 is negative, the kappa squared must be bigger than this, which means that the absolute value of the extrinsic curvature is bigger than this square, but this quantity. There is a kappa star, there is a minimum other expansion or contraction rate, the absolute value. So the universe, there is a region where it either expands or contracts very fast. Now, if you add now the hypothesis that there was in the past a Big Bang, so that the universe starts expanding, then we can show that this region, there must be a region which actually keeps expanding, not contracting very fast. Because not that contracting very fast would be bad for the purposes, because you can go very quickly to a black hole, okay? So we want to exclude that possibility. This can be done by the following construction. So suppose that on any surface, it's not true that kappa must be bigger than kappa star, but it's true that the absolute value of kappa must be bigger than kappa star. So imagine that there is a surface that violates this thing that I want to prove, and kappa satisfies this bound but is less than kappa star. So suppose that there is a surface where kappa is less than kappa star and somewhere positive, and all the rest is negative. Now, the region, since in the past there was an expanding Big Bang, this formally means that there is a surface where kappa is positive everywhere. The universe is expanding everywhere. This is the Big Bang. This means that we can pull back along the normal vector all the regions, doing a sort of intermediate mean curvature flow, where we pull back all the regions where kappa was negative, and this deformation cannot go on forever, because at some point kappa must become positive, because the universe was expanding. So you stop where kappa is equal to zero, and now you have constructed a surface where absolute value of kappa is everywhere less than kappa star, violating Einstein equations. So this means that, this is not true. This means that if you start with a Big Bang, kappa is bigger than kappa star everywhere. At one point, so there is a region where kappa is bigger than kappa star. In particular, if we have a cosmological constant, means that kappa is bigger than the Hubble rate of the de Sitter space induced by the cosmological constant, and positive, okay? It's expanding universe. So we just proved that if you take a Big Bang and a Big Bang cosmology for a topology 3 or 2, the universe, there is always a region that keeps expanding, notwithstanding the formation of black holes and singularities somewhere else. Now, this result is very, very general. I mean, we didn't assume any metric, particular metric. There is one subtlety that we assumed, which we find a bit unphysical, but I would like to spell it out. We need to assume the absence of finite volume singularities. That is, it is possible that the universe could expand very nicely and at a certain point stop expanding, which is a singularity for no reason. This singularity can be engineered, but they are conjectured to be removed with some mild assumption on the regularity of the stress tensor. So in general, this singularity is somewhat physical. The singularities we always think about generativity are the one that things go together and collapse. But it's true that one can engineer singularities that violate this, and so this is a subtlety that we have to spell out. Now, so I show that this manifold always keeps expanding. There is always a region that keeps expanding, even though other regions collapse into black holes. And I showed how to construct this surface of mean curvature flow that give a very geometric picture of how the volume keeps growing with time. Now, does this surface reach infinite volume? This is a very interesting question for inflation, that, as I will argue in a second. And we're not super sure that the volume reaches infinite volume, because it could be that the volume what is true is that the volume keeps growing, but it could be that it reaches an asymptote. Keeps growing very, very slowly. This is very, very unlucky. It's not quite expected physically for the following reason. These are surfaces that always keep expanding very fast. There is always a region which expands very fast, bigger than Hubble. So the rate of growth of kappa square is bounded from below at one point. So the only way in which the volume cannot reach infinity is that this region shrinks with time and becomes a zero measure, zero volume. But this means that this region becomes singular. Now, there are theorems, as I mentioned, on regularity that forbids this to happen unless this surface reaches infinite time in the future. Okay, so you can have this goes in infinite time and this stays somewhere here. So it could be that the surface becomes singular when it reaches infinite time in the future. And it's pretty clear, at least intuitive, that at this point the surface can become singular because I don't have any mathematical theorem to protect me, but it should have infinite volume because it's a space-like surface. I should say that this is a surface is space-like. Actually, it becomes more and more space-like because the volume is increasing every time. And it extends an infinite amount of time. However, we're not quite able to prove it because it could be that the surface becomes very, very close to null. And so, okay. This is not expected, but that's what we're trying to prove now. So this is we're thinking about this, trying to show that actually this surface really becomes of infinite volume, given that there is always a region which has bounded rate of growth. And given that this stretching makes the surface very, very regular. But okay, here we're trying to prove at the level of mathematics. So modulo these concerns, this surface will reach infinite volume, okay? So that the vacuum, and since matter dilutes and vacuum doesn't dilute, the universe will be dominated locally by vacuum, by the vacuum energy. And inflation will start at that point if the potential, the inflaton is still on top of the potential, which is an hypothesis. Now, therefore, the probability to start inflation is therefore reduced to estimating the probability for these topologies to happen, and we saw that clearly at least is an order one chance, if not more, as well as for the inflaton of being on top of the potential. You see, Neil, you see, this was the hypothesis, okay? It's written there. I didn't write it a while ago. It was already there, so. I will not comment how likely it is. This is effect, okay? I'm being mathematicians, these are the hypotheses, okay? But I think the problem of initial homogeneity seems to be resolved, that it has been reduced to this, which is, in particular, these all the perturbation modes that are exponentially suppressed, given probability, I think is gone. And it's gone because the technical mistake of the argument I gave it before is that it was assumed that each mode was independent from the other, so the probability for it to be closed was 1/2 every time. But we just saw that there is a topological constraint on all the modes. If you have a manifold, you cannot put the mode in an arbitrary form that you want. And this guarantee that one point will be lucky. So there is a guarantee with certainty that one point will be lucky. So this was the mistake of the one. Now, this is as far as mathematics brought us. And this, I think, it gives a very strong suggestion that inflation will start always with these topologies. But of course we can check this by performing numerical simulation. In fact, actually, historically, this is the other way around. We perform first the simulations, and then we came out with this mathematical proof, which, however, doesn't get as far as proving that inflation starts. I think it gets pretty close. So the approach, a more practical approach, is start with valley in homogeneous universe and simulate its evolution. And in order to do that, you need a code that is able to handle the singularities, horizon, black holes, which are not simple. But the solution is ask William East, which is a postdoc, will be here, and the problem is already solved. Okay, you ask him, he comes back a week after with the problem solved. So we were very good because we asked him. Okay, that was our merit. So let's consider the strategy of how to simulate these universes. And I think this is the first time that kind of codes are applied to cosmological setup with singularities, okay? So consider an initial highly homogeneous universe and define clearly this unit expanding. Define a local Hubble rate by some form of a Strizzi equivalent. It doesn't matter that much. But there will be modes longer than the Hubble rate and more shorter than the Hubble rate. Now, the fact of modes longer than the Hubble rate is very easy to understand analytically. It doesn't really need to be simulated. As long as a mode is longer than the local Hubble rate, its effect is simply to renormalize the energy density, as we said at the beginning, which means that locally the universe looks like an homogeneous Bianchi universe. It could be a bit anisotropic because a certain mode has some direction. But the evolution of an anisotropic universe is well understood. Only closed Bianchi universes can lead to collapse. Open universes help expansion. Now, you can realize the following. If the universe is open on average, meaning that the zero mode, take a region, and the zero mode of the energy is such that it makes this a Bianchi universe. The zero mode is homogeneous by definition, and it will be a Bianchi universe. It's such that the Bianchi universe is open. So you just look at the zero mode, one mode. Then it's very easy to realize that there must be a region here labeled by which is one, for example, which at all times, it's the effect of long modes is to make open at all times. Let me explain. If you take, for example, the zero mode of the energy minus the energy density, the M Planck square, this is the quantity that tells you if it's negative, is the zero mode makes the universe open. Then this integral must be negative, which means that if you divide by two the region, half must be, one region must be negative, one region must be positive. Then if you bisect again the region where the integral was negative, you get a region which is negative, and the other must be positive because the sum must be negative. And you keep bisecting the regions. And so you get a nested set of regions, all nested, where at all times the effect of modes longer than this region is to make it open. And this again is a topological constraint induced by the zero mode in this case. So this means that there is a region 1, 2, 3, 4, that at each time the effect of the long mode is to make it open. So you can focus on this region. In this region, as modes longer than the Hubble scale, they don't lead to collapse. Now, when a mode crosses and comes inside the Hubble scale, we are not inflating, so modes re-enter Hubble, then these perturbations are order one. It's very complicated. The dynamical effect is very strong. They will form over density that end in black holes. But the intuition is that by conservation of matter, of energy, things will be sucked into black holes, leaving the remaining empty, and inflation will start where there is an empty region. This can only needs to be simulated, and these are the models we simulated so far. So we start with an inflaton potential and an inflaton field which is very, very inhomogeneous. And I'll flash through the results. So this is the simulation. So on the you can focus on the right. It's a box. It's rho over rho of the Wilby cosmological constant. And you can see we go all the way to 10 to the 3. So we start with a very inhomogeneous universe from 0 to the 3. And you see that as time goes on, the white region grow and the black region gets more and more concentrated. You see the black region is here. At some point, this black region becomes a black hole. Here you see the black hole, and this becomes all white, which means it's empty. And you see that the black hole is ellipsoidal because it still has to emit gravitational waves. So if you wait a long time, it will be... It's a form of a quadrupole because it emits gravitational wave. Now, if you look at some plots, you can see that we start... the universe is very inhomogeneous initially, but the average energy density goes down like e to the fourth because it's radiation, it's the gradient energy. But then at a certain point, in all this cosmology, becomes equal to lambda. And they say also the Hubble ray goes to lambda. So universe expands like a radiation, even though it's very inhomogeneous, form a black hole. But the point is that the black hole dilutes away, and you remain with a cosmological constant. Sometimes you can see that, for example, this is rho over rho lambda minus 1. You see, we start with 10 to the 3, which is a very, very high... we're not dominated at all by the cosmological constant to start with. And the dashed line is the maximum of this difference, rho over rho lambda, the difference. As you can see, at some point here, we have a very spike. This is because the black hole formed. But then if you remove the black hole, it goes down. And on average, we go all the way to 1, which is the rho lambda. So black hole form, dilute, universe homogenizes, inflation starts. So it looks like there is no need to impose. Simulation confirmed, actually anticipated what we expected from the mathematical result, which is this. You start and you will form inflation. You will inflate with certainty. With certainty, just to make nil empty. So it looks like the initial homogeneity problem is not an issue at all. You just have to estimate the probability of the topology, order of the zero mode. So it's just one mode. Is it positive or negative? But we require the field to be on top of the potential, so I'm making you very happy. So why? 1 minute just to make the director happy. I mean. So So consider an inflator potential. We start with very, very perturbed. So this is the remaining. I think this problem is gone, but we find, or maybe can elucidate even more, a slight issue with inflation. So consider a potential, an inflator, which is perturbed on top of its potential. If delta phi is very small, so that everywhere the field is on top of the potential, there is no problem. But the inflator can be very large. It can be even longer. Larger than the average phi zero of the fluctuation. These fluctuations are very fast moving, but they can sample in with an amplitude the full potential. Now the dynamics of the average field is not doesn't move under the force v prime of the average value, which will be here and this is zero, but moves under the average of the force, average of v prime. And the average of v prime in this case is much bigger than v prime, because v prime was zero here, v prime at the average, but here is much bigger. Let me just say it from the effective point of view. These delta phi fluctuations are large classical fluctuations, but they move much faster than the background. So you can integrate out and obtain the effective field theory of the zero mode. And since these fluctuations probe all the potential, they get an effective potential which is much steeper than the one of the zero of the theory with zero mode plus the fluctuations. And so you get more potential like this. And now this is a non-inflating potential. So in fact, in all the simulation, we find that when the delta phi is very big, we get non-inflation. We don't get an inflation solution, but the field is sucked to the bottom of the potential, or it moves in an effective potential which is not inflating. I think this is related to what we were saying before. However, this is I'm not making any bold claim, because this is not the former homogeneity problem. This is a different problem. It's just telling you, you have to have a long potential and be sure that you're on top of that. And also, it's highly model dependent at the quantitative level. Really, the effect really goes how steep is this. Here, I took an exaggerated plot. It depends on the parametric of how fast how steep it is. Okay, let me conclude by saying that it is widely believed that in order to start inflation, we need an homogeneous part on order Hubble. And here, by using numerical general relativity simulations that are able to handle singularities that were available recently thanks to the study for LIGOs, or less usual, and also alternatively using less usual mathematical techniques that go under the name of mean curvature flow or topological ideas, we have shown that required this homogeneity probe, this initial homogeneity, is not necessary. Even by starting with a highly homogeneous universe, if the condition topology of the manifold are satisfied, or the zero mode, because at the end it just matters the zero mode of the fluctuation, there will be a potentially small region in terms of the initial condition where inflation starts with certainty. So I think these mathematical techniques have been around for several years, but they've never been the use has been limited. And the numerical techniques have been only available quite recently. So I think these represent some first study of these novel techniques. And so I'm not sure that what I told you is the end of the story. It could be that many, many results are just behind the surface. Okay, thanks.
All right, so maybe in the interest of time, Vera, do you want to set up while we have time for one question for Leonardo?
I just wanted to point out some work in 1986 with the same conclusion with much simpler arguments. That if you look at the Einstein equations and analyze the evolution of the curvature, K, extrinsic curvature, K, you can show directly that for existence of a cosmological constant and with other matter that satisfies the strong energy condition, that this local evolution to expansion is guaranteed.
Who are the authors of this paper?
Jensen and Stein Schabes.
Okay.
So they followed
I'm not aware of this paper. Yeah.
They followed up Wald's work, and they argued that with a fixed cosmological constant, inflation is generic in patches of the universe which are open.
I'll check. I mean, we have
same conclusion.
Well, we have asked Wald. We have asked Barrow.
Yeah,
I'll check it.
I'll show you.
I'll check it. Yes, I'll check it.